The decapitated head of a farmer's wife, dug up by feral dogs from her shallow grave outside Skibbereen in January 1847, marked a turning point in Ireland's descent into horror. Between 1845 and 1855, Ireland's population of 8.2 million would shrink by a third, 1.1 million dead from starvation and disease, another 2 million fled overseas. Though smaller in absolute numbers than later Chinese or Soviet famines, the proportional devastation was unparalleled in modern European history. What transformed a crop failure into one of history's most haunting tragedies was British policy that prioritized agricultural modernization and character improvement over saving lives. As officials required small farmers to surrender their plots to qualify for relief while transferring costs to Ireland itself, a humanitarian crisis became a national apocalypse whose echoes still reverberate in Irish memory nearly two centuries later. By 1845, Ireland's desperate poverty stemmed from rapid population growth and economic collapse. Between 1745 and 1845, the population exploded from 2.5 million to 8.2 million, while post-Napoleonic economic contraction devastated Irish industries. The industrial collapse pushed people onto already crowded land, creating intense competition and subdivision. By 1841, 45% of Irish farms were under 5 acres, forcing peasants to rely exclusively on potatoes. A single acre produced up to 6 tons, enough to feed a family of 6 for a year. Ironically, despite their poverty, the Irish peasantry appeared remarkably robust. The average Irishman was taller and stronger than his English counterpart. Yet this reliance on potatoes created extreme vulnerability. Scarcely a year passed without regional crop failures somewhere in Ireland during the 1830s. Beyond poverty, sectarian violence troubled British officials. Secret societies like the Molly Maguires defended poor farmers through intimidation, while the bitter divide between the Catholic majority and Protestant Anglo-Irish ruling class made controlling violence difficult. By the 1840s, British officials embraced commercial farming as a solution, believing it would reduce population growth and undermine nationalist movements, a transition that could best be accomplished during a crisis. In the wet summer of 1845, a mysterious potato blight swept across Western Europe, starting in Flanders before reaching England and Ireland by August. Scientists debated 3 possible causes: weather conditions, biological degeneration, or fungal disease, with the latter eventually proven correct. October 1845 marked the undeniable arrival of catastrophe in Ireland as farmers discovered their potatoes rotting in the ground. Despite desperate religious attempts to save crops, the blight proved unstoppable. The crisis sparked political upheaval, reviving England's Corn Laws debate and inflaming Irish sectarian tensions. Prime Minister Peel responded by launching a scientific commission and secretly arranging to import American maize to feed 1 million people and control prices. Charles Edward Trevelyan, Assistant Secretary of the British Treasury, significantly influenced Ireland's famine response. A Whig and laissez-faire advocate, he followed moralism, an evangelical belief opposing public aid as deterring self-improvement. He viewed the famine as divine intervention to teach the Irish a lesson, writing that the judgment of God sent the calamity to teach the Irish a lesson. The relief efforts were plagued by ideological constraints and practical failures. The public works program paid higher wages than agricultural work, regardless of productivity, leading to minimal effort. The workforce exploded from 100,000 to 560,000 by August 1846, with surgeon William Wilde describing seeing ghosts of men traveling miles to break up good old road or commence unnecessary new ones. When a second, more devastating blight struck in July 1846, destroying the entire potato crop, Trevelyan insisted on restructuring relief programs rather than expanding aid. His new plan shifted costs to Irish gentry through a mandatory labor rate tax, requiring full repayment of treasury loans with interest. As winter approached, Trevelyan refused to reopen government food depots despite warnings of violence, claiming early opening would transfer the famine from Ireland to England. By December 1846, death became commonplace. Half of Skibbereen Workhouse's children admitted since October were dead or dying. Laborers collapsed returning from work. Families perished by roadsides, and armed bands roamed the countryside. The economy collapsed. Shops closed, manufacturing declined, and fields lay unplanted. Traditional funeral customs disappeared as coffins became scarce or unaffordable. Workhouses used reusable coffins with fallaway bottoms. The poor wrapped their dead in cardboard or newspapers. One woman, after burying her husband and son, came home to find her 16-year-old daughter dead. She washed and dressed the girl, then twisted hay into a rope to carry her daughter's body on her back to the chapel. By January 1847, pestilence engulfed Ireland as typhus and relapsing fever spread rapidly. The lowly louse proved to be the critical vector in the epidemic. The chaos of mass death, flight, and social breakdown had shattered the protective isolation that normally shielded rural Irish communities from epidemics. The pestilence decimated caregivers. Of 473 government medical officers assigned to fever duty, 1 in 13 died. By spring 1847, people were fleeing Ireland recklessly. 215,000 sailed to North America and 150,000 to Britain. The emigrant ships now carried not just the middle classes, but the ancient Gaelic-speaking peasantry who had never ventured far from home. Overnight, generational bonds to the land shattered as people became barefoot pilgrims heading to ports. The exodus was so desperate that parents abandoned children to poorhouses, landlords subsidized tenant departures, and workhouses provided fare money to inmates. "I cannot hold on long," wrote one Carey woman to her children in Boston. "For the honor of our Lord Jesus Christ and His Blessed Mother, hurry and take us out of this," wrote another parent. Entire townlands emptied. Some Galway villages lost a third of their population. For Irish emigrants, Liverpool represented a brutal first encounter with modernity. Peasant culture had afforded even the poorest a sense of dignity, but in Liverpool, the emigrant suddenly found himself an object of horror and contempt. This Liverpool mirror forced the peasant to see himself through modern eyes, no longer a respected member of a traditional community, but an outcast in the industrial world. The devastation continued into the 1850s. The Gregory Clause, which denied relief to small farmers unless they surrendered all but a quarter acre of land, drove eviction rates up 1,000% between 1847-1851, overwhelming the poor law system. 1 million died and 2 million fled, reducing Ireland's population by a third. England's relief policies, though not genocidally intended, were parsimonious, short-sighted, grotesquely twisted by religion and ideology, causing countless preventable deaths and generations of Irish bitterness toward England. The Great Hunger transformed not just Ireland's demographics, but its cultural identity, creating a diaspora that would forever change both Ireland and the nations that received its emigrants. The famine's legacy echoes today in Irish politics, culture, and collective memory. It remains a powerful reminder of how ideology can blind policymakers to human suffering, and how natural disaster becomes catastrophe when filtered through the lens of prejudice and economic theory.